I can hear the I think the voice is good. The man, of course, always needs to be loud. Always. Good afternoon, kids.
Hey.
You're in the land of the Red Sox.
Yeah!
Is this the Red Sox Nation, so to speak?
Yes, sir.
Hey, I got to watch them on NESN yesterday, spring training. It was beautiful. I enjoy, and I know what all the green caps mean. Having been to spring training, you got to go to St. Patrick's Day. This is Mr. Stephen Mogin on the guitar from Asheville, Massachusetts. So we're here to demonstrate, answer questions, you know, preferably about music, but you know, we'll talk ball if we have to. I know my team was swept by the Red Sox in the 2004 World Series. Congratulations to you. But the great thing was my father was a lifelong Red Sox fan, and he was born in 1919. So I think you know how long he waited to see his team win. And so that being said, I couldn't even get mad when the Red Sox swept the St. Louis Cardinals because the best team won. Someday I'll wander back to that little country shack. That little girl that's waiting there for me. I can see her smiling face standing there beside the gate, down in the hills of Tennessee. Oh, little girl of mine, Tennessee, I know she's waiting there for me. Someday I'll settle down in that little country town with that little girl of mine, Tennessee. First time to see one of these. I've seen these in magazines, the Bose column there. So it's like, are you in that one and I'm in that one?
I think so.
Is this a stereo thing? Okay. First time going. More guitar.
Okay.
Well, so I see all you mandolin pick. I can't see who else actually holding an instrument. Who else a mandolin player in this house? Nice. Wow, that's a nice, ooh, mirror image. Well, when it comes to mandolin picking, of course, I play the mandolin and the fiddle, but I guess I think most people that play both, I think you tend to find they're fiddlers that also play the mandolin. And I think Tim O'Brien and I, we've talked about it before, we consider ourselves mandolin pickers that also play the fiddle. And I first started playing, grew up on a farm outside Bowling Green, Kentucky, which is only 55 miles north of Nashville, Tennessee. And at the time, I had no idea what an opportunity it was. I thought everybody could turn on the television and see Bill Monroe and Jim and Jesse and the Osborne Brothers and Gladys Scruggs when Curly Seckler was playing mandolin with them. So my father was a farmer that loved the fiddle and the mandolin as well, but especially fiddling he loved. And growing up, there was I was thinking about the fact that the reason you actually started calling them albums, that I'm old enough to have been in on this, because my dad would buy these fiddle albums, and an album at the time was like a photographic album, like an album of photos. And you would have 578 records in one jacket. So it was kind of like an album of photos, only it was you know, holding 10 sides, 10 tunes, 578. So he would buy these fiddle albums, and I remember one was by Roy Acuff and the Smoky Mountain Boys. It wasn't actually Mr. Acuff playing the fiddle, it was a guy named Tommy Magnus. And so that I would hear these when I was probably about 8 years old, becoming aware of it. And then he would buy, but the greatest ones, he'd buy records by a fiddle player named Tommy Jackson. And Tommy was basically the main guy that played the fiddle on the Grand Ole Opry, and he would back different people, as well as they'd give Tommy Jackson a fiddle tune to play for square dances and stuff. So Tommy Jackson would make these square dance records, and back then you could buy them. You had to make sure if you wanted to buy them to play over a sound system like this for dancers at a recreation hall, you'd buy them with calls, where they would have an actual square dance caller on the record. And my dad made sure that he did not buy them with calls. He wanted to hear the fiddling. I don't want to hear square dance calling. I'll go to a square dance. I want to hear a caller, and a caller being the person that calls out the dance patterns for the dancers to do. And so I now realize that when you buy the Tommy Jackson fiddle albums, it would always say without calls. And on these fiddle records was a mandolin player that I loved the mandolin playing. And I'd seen Bill Monroe and heard Bill Monroe, but it was really the way this particular person played the fiddle tunes, right in unison with the fiddle. And because bluegrass mandolin players some don't always follow the same pattern that a fiddler would play with the left hand. So years later, I played on a recording session with a person who had played rhythm guitar on those records. And I was going, but who played the mandolin? And he said, Hank Garland, who was known for, he was an up-and-coming country jazz, more jazz than country. And Hank Garland was one of the most amazing young musicians going. And I said, but I didn't know he played mandolin. And this guy said, he really didn't. That he was such a great musician that Tommy would teach him the melody like 5 minutes before they record the record. And that's what a good musician this guy Hank Garland was. So there you go. That's my style. I grew up copying a guy that didn't really play the mandolin. But the love of the instrument is, led me to follow where you would find that instrument, and that was in the world of bluegrass music. And so from there I started, trying to pay attention to all the great mandolin players at the time, like I said, Bob Osborne, Jesse McReynolds for sure. Ronnie Reno was a great picker back then. He was still playing with his Reno and Smiley on the mandolin, as well as later with his dad, Don Reno. Dean Webb with the Dillards, I loved his playing. John Duffy, loved John Duffy's playing. I think John Duffy had one of the greatest rhythm chops of anyone. To me, I loved his rhythm chops. I tried to style myself after John. But it was really, Bill Monroe is the guy that, literally could just look at you and put the fear of the Lord in you, just give you this look. And I'll never forget when I was finally starting to feel like I was kind of getting somewhere on the mandolin, but Mr. Bill kind of knew me a little more as a kid fiddler. And I would get to play on occasion with the Bluegrass Boys, but not Bill. I didn't get to play with Bill. The Bluegrass Boys would start the show off, and at that time the band was a young guy named Peter Rowan on guitar, Richard Green on fiddle, Lamar Greer on banjo, and James Monroe on bass. So they would start the show for 20 minutes, and sometimes we'd go hear them, and they would let me play a tune on the fiddle with them. Richard Green would get me up. So Bill had heard me play as a fiddler, and so now cut to about 2 years later, Roland White's in his band and on guitar, and Byron Berline's on fiddle. So I knew Byron from going to fiddle contests as a boy. I met him when I was a kid. And so we're having a jam, I'm playing Roland's mandolin, which I was thrilled. I didn't have one near that good, so I was just thrilled to get to play Roland's mandolin made by Randy Wood. I didn't know it, but Mr. Monroe was standing behind me about 5 minutes listening to this stuff. And finally, we get done with the tune, we've been playing along. This is where I finally started realizing maybe I am getting somewhere on the mandolin, when Bill Monroe looked down at me and he says, I want you to stay with that fiddle now. We ain't got enough good young fiddlers coming up now. Just on that fiddle. Okay, I'm with you, baby. I got you now. We'll do a Bill Monroe tune, and a lot of people, when you think of Bill Monroe, you think of the harsh tone he'd get the. Which, that's one of the things I love as much as anything about his playing. But it was really when I heard him play this tune in 1965 at Roanoke, Virginia, and he and Peter Rowan would sing a duet on it, but I've heard it played instrumentally. David Grisman and I recorded it years later as a kind of a tribute to Bill Munro on a record called Bluegrass Mandolin Extravaganza. There's some licks I'll play in this are exactly the way I remember Bill playing them, and obviously some of the rest of them I can't remember what he did, but sometimes I think some of his prettiest stuff is not the fast notes, but the nice slow prettiness. So this is the old tune, Wayfaring Stranger. At the right about the last chorus I was taking on that, I found myself going back to I saw Bill Munro do this when I was 14, and it just the way he would go. I mean, still, I don't know. That's why Baskin-Robbins makes 31 flavors, I guess. The floor is open for questions. If you have any, anything. Baseball, mandolin. Yes, sir.
Tell us about your mandolin.
This mandolin. Well, this one is one that Tony Rice long ago named it the Old Hoss. So, Hoss is the short name, and it's so funny because of all the people who've ever worked on it, we talk about this mandolin like it's a living, breathing person, and how's Hoss doing, man? Well, he's doing okay. So, you know, it's truly, it's sick enough when you assign a name to your instrument, but it's truly sick when you assign a gender. This is very manly mandolin. This one put the man in mandolin. But, why? Because Norman Blake made it that way before I got it. This one is a 1937 Gibson, and Norman Blake owned this mandolin. He bought it from George Gruen probably about 1972, maybe. And it's the mandolin that Norman played on the John Hartford record, Morning Bugle. And John even, if you're familiar with that record, there's a song called Nobody Eats at Lime Balls Anymore. And it's John finger-picking this mandolin. So this is the one that was played on that. And I knew of this mandolin before got the opportunity to get it, and Norman bought this from George Gruen, and I knew the instrument, but I wasn't that impressed with the sound with it, and it sounded like something, I don't know, I just didn't ring my bell, and so Norman bought it, and he's the kind of guy that if he's got an instrument, and it's over a period of time, if it's not satisfying him, he will try to figure out what he can do to bring more out of that instrument. What he did was kind of drastic. He had Randy Wood, the great mandolin builder, took the back off of this mandolin, and then the braces were shaved, the tone bars. So shaved those way down, probably to somewhat like Lloyd Lord-style specs. Put the back on, and nobody could believe it was the same mandolin after that. And so I remember seeing John Hartford, Norman Blake at a club called Kenny's Castaways in New York City. And I walked in right, and the PA wasn't even on yet. And Blake's sitting up on stage, beating on his mandolin. I just went, I can't believe that's the same one. And sure enough, that's what. So Randy Wood is the reason that it sounds so good. And then after that, John and Norman one night they decided that they hated the original finish on this mandolin, which was a very from that period was like a very yellow colored, and kind of went the sunburst went from yellow to black. Not one of Gibson's, you know, prouder moments. And, matter of fact, I believe this was a factory second. It's got the sloppiest binding work. I mean, it's like they would not let one go out of the factory like this now. You know, I know they wouldn't. And so somebody who's probably had an incredible hangover to put the binding on this thing. And John and Norman, they decided one night, this finish has to go. We can't take it. So Norman, I think he just, you know, probably used his pocket knife and they just started carving on it. And John would carry a tape recorder around all the time. So John had that, you know, his great deep voice. And he was a radio announcer in his younger days. And I have heard the tape and I regret I don't own it. Because nobody knows where it is now. Of John and Norman taking the finish off this mandolin one night. But John's sort of as the sportscaster, you know. Now we're going around the treble F hole. Now let's go in for a close up. And sorry, Carly. And then when they took the finish off, Norman said in his own words that he did some random hippie sanding, which means it wasn't measured or anything. And he was, and especially around this F hole here, it's really thin, and it's broken a couple of times back in the. Back in the 70s, I think, and simply because there's only so thin you can make a talk. It's got to stay together. And then after that, they had, right before I got it, Norman had Randy Wood put the varnish finish on this. So this is a varnish finish, which, of course, as you know, is thinner and wears out a lot easier. So I've been playing this thing since 1973, so I'm not really as hard on mandolins as this may appear, however. I don't mind a pig scratch, but there's a reason. The reason going to weld my belt buckle over here. I cannot take clothing scratches on instruments. If it's done in the line of duty, okay, I can take that. And but it is amazing because now Gibson makes the new Sam Bush models and own a few of them, and I'm happy to say I'm happy with them. They're good man ones. But it's amazing how, you know, I've had this one and it looks like this, and on those new ones, every time I put a new scratch in, it's like, oh, wait, I did that. Yes, sir.
Does the top go up and down much with the changing seasons?
Yeah, it does. Well, on this one, the top seems to move, and I don't know if that's the age of the wood, the dryness of it, but it's gotten where when we go to Colorado in the wintertime, I just don't take this one anymore. It moves so much, and it seemed this one, you know, it's fragile. It's an old man, you know, it's old, and it tends to move more. And the new ones, although I must believe that the top is moving a lot, or they wouldn't sound so good. This one, yeah, it's kind of fragile. So certain places, I didn't know if I should bring it to the last. We were up here a month ago in this area somewhat, and on that one, I forgot to put one of those dampets inside the mandolin. So after a 20-hour bus ride, it's totally dry. And then we got up here, and it was very, very cold and dry. Time I got home, the action was just laying on the fingerboard again. And because of the pickup I use, I can't move the bridge. So I actually had to go home and get it worked on, get a shim, put it under the pickup, raise it back up. Now it sounds like it's supposed to again. So I'm careful to keep it. By one of those, if you know what I'm talking about, those dampets, the moisturizer you can put in them. Seems to help. It does seem to help.
What kind of pickup is it, Sam?
It is a Barkus Berry Hot Dot, and they haven't been made since the 70s. It's probably one of the cheapest, least technically advanced pickups ever made, and it works great on this mandolin. And I've got a few of them left over. I've been real careful. I was a pack rat. I knew they quit making them, and they were made to go inside a guitar bridge, so to speak. And I've tried them on my new ones, and this, I have a Sam Bush model with me as a spare, and I love that mandolin. It's a fine instrument, and it doesn't amplify the same way, and I wish I knew why, but maybe it's because this one doesn't sustain quite as long as a new one might. The new ones seem to sustain a little more, and maybe that's the dryness of the wood. I don't know, but this one, it works great on these. And I have some Lloyd Bags pickups on some of my other mandolins. They seem to work pretty well. And I'm always kind of looking around for the next new pickup to try, because I don't think that market's been exhausted yet, or I don't think the research has been exhausted. And I'm actually, Steve and I were just talking about it. I need to work with a company and see if we can come up with something that is similar to this, but because I can only wedge it in one spot. Case in point, you know, I can't move my bridge up and down when I'm on the road, and the action might change. So that is the advantage to it, like a bridge top pickup, such as a Bags or a Fishman. You can adjust your action as needed. But on this one, I'm kind of at the mercy, because I don't want. I'm the kind of person, I hate to take the strings off an instrument. You know, change them one at a time. I don't like, because whenever the strings are off this thing, I swear it takes about 10 playing hours for it to sound like itself again. I don't know if anybody else has ever gone through that, but they like the tension.
Drums, it's really the same thing. Have you ever had a tone guard on Haas?
No. You mean a pick guard?
On the back.
Oh, on the back? No, I have an amplifier. That's what Jeff always said. Why do you guys try to play so loud? Turn back and hit that knob a little bit. It was actually Jeffro that, you know, he had influenced me. He just said, why don't you put a pickup on that thing? And I said, well, I don't like the tone.
I suggest that you plug that thing into that Bose.
I'm sure it would be good, yeah. But Jeffro said, he goes, tone. Nobody ever told me I had great tone. They just tell me they can hear all my notes. He said, I can't hear all yours. I said, I don't know. He goes, well, who do you think you are, Bill Monroe or something? And I kind of went, maybe I do. He said, get over it. We got one already. But, I mean, so Jethro, I mean, he didn't strive to find, you know, how to make it sound like the great acoustic male. I mean, I'm still on that search because I have a microphone, a Countryman microphone, and a pickup. So hopefully the mic can give back, you know, some of what the pickup sort of takes away. But, yeah, when we play in an ensemble with bass and drums, I finally reached the point I don't want to beat my hands off. I don't want to play as hard. And John Duffy and Jethro both used to tell me, you just play too hard. And I didn't believe them because I thought, no, you don't play hard enough. But Jethro was going, look, it's only that far from the nut to the bridge. You know, you're killing the instrument. You've got to learn to soften up a little bit. And so it's like I spent my first 20 years trying to play as hard as I could, and now I spent the last 20 years trying to soften up enough that, you know, you're not overplaying the instrument, you're not overattacking it, and it has helped to sustain, you know, stuff. Kind of a tune where you can hear the Bill Monroe influence, but then I'll go off and play a bunch of other stuff. You might even recognize a Vassar Clemens lick in here. But I'll start it out and keep the melody going the way Bill Monroe would have done it, and then kind of go off from there on the old Patty on the Turnpike. Thank you. Carly. Carly. Hey, Carly. Yeah. Hey, Carly. Good dog. Hey, you stay over there. I am a dog lover. My wife always says, babies, dogs, and drunks love Sam. And cats, too. They like it. Yes, sir?
When you were chopping, were you damping everything down? Kind of like the word sounded like?
Question was, when you were chopping, were you damping everything kind of down? Yes, I guess so. And what's going on is like, I assume many of you do know how to chop. And it's interesting because, I mean, when you hear, if you lined up 10 mandolin players, you would hear 10 different chops. And so what I've kind of tried to do, I played, you know, a snare drum in the marching band in high school, not particularly well, but I learned about just subdividing the beat and stuff. And because, you know, I've often wondered if the way rhythm chopping got started, and I think of Bill Monroe as the guy that started it, is did he just let his action get so high he couldn't get the strings pushed down? I mean, I don't know, because that's kind of almost what it feels like, because, I mean, your right hand is really not doing anything that different, but if you're not chopping, and even though, and it's interesting, because that very chord, that Bill Monroe chord, I would listen to records, and I could not figure out that chord. And finally, I saw Bill Monroe on TV, and there it was. So it was like, you know, having the first, you know, homespun video or something, getting to grow up around Nashville, watching TV and watching people's hands work on the instruments. And so, in other words, if without chopping, it's just this. Now, what I try to do is, and it is almost the illusion of like, you're sort of, I hope this is a decent explanation. You're sort of like releasing the chord. You're releasing it as you strike it with your pick. So without, in other words, it's not really dampening so much, but it is like taking away the sustain with the left hand. Because without chopping, it's this. It's interesting because I don't know what somewhere in the latter 50s, I guess, Mr. Monroe kind of started this chop up, because I was recording with Peter Rowan doing really old Bill Monroe tunes, and I'd be chopping long, and Peter would go, you know, Bill didn't really chop on this song. I said, really? So we'd listen to the old record, sure enough. Oh, okay. Because by the time I was old enough to hear Bill Monroe live in the early 60s, 64 and 65, he was doing that chop a lot, so I grew up like, yeah, I want to do that, and so a lot of others were doing it too. John Duffy was doing it, and I think Jesse McReynolds is one of the only great mandolin players that's popular that didn't try to copy Bill Monroe, doesn't really play with the rhythm chop, so to speak, and he's wonderful. But yeah, so what I'm trying to do is just sort of I'm literally releasing the chord as I'm striking it with the pick. And like I say, different people chop just a little differently, you know. Doyle Lawson's a great mandolin chopper, but we don't chop any really alike that much. But I think mine probably comes more from John Duffy, because I notice you tend to notice the third and fourth strings more in mine chop, and I definitely always admired that about John Duffy, so I love his rhythm chopping. And then there's basically two different kinds of chop I like to try, and one is with your standard bluegrass kind of chord. So in other words, you're not just chopping the backbeat, you're filling in a little bit. That's, and then to try to add a little. That's pretty much the way Bill Monroe would kind of. You can, but you can hear both beats in that. And And I think that may have come from where, you know, when before Bill had a banjo player in his band, he would do more of what we call the old stomps, you know, like the bluegrass stomp. And that's kind of more like guitar kind of, like F old guitar playing. So I like to try to do that chop where I really am sort of releasing the chord as I hit it with the pick. That drum sound, that percussive sound. And then there's another one, and then I don't know where I don't know where this came from, but when I first heard Bob Marley and the Wailers, the thing that attracted me to that, and the way my crazy brain works, is the rhythm guitar reminded me of the way a bluegrass mandolin player plays rhythm, and particularly Bill Monroe. And so it's like one, two, three, four. Now that rhythm, what I'm doing there, I am using the side of my little finger to actually damp, because that's just, when it comes to chords, I like simple ones. That's my favorite A chord in the world right there. No defining third. That one, not that. It's like power chords, so sort of. And but at any rate, somewhere along the line, I'm actually dampening that off with maybe both these fingers. It's kind of a. And you can almost. Like if you imagine a drum kit that the upstroke on the first string is almost like a little hi-hat thing, you know. But the bottom line about chopping is start simply because you can always add more licks in. You can always add more right hand, but the basic thing is to just make sure you're keeping time. That's the job. And that's the trouble with being a mandolin player. Nobody ever chops rhythm for us when we take a solo. I take it back. Jerry Douglas can chop as good as any mandolin player. So can Scott Vestal on the banjo and what have you. By the way, this fellow here, Steven, is a great mandolin player, so that's why you're not going to hear that today. And you stay on the guitar. Enough good young guitar players coming up. Yes?
Who's playing with you tonight? Who's touring with you?
Tonight, well, Stephen Mosian on guitar. Basically the same band we've had for a long time. Byron House some days. Chris Brown is on drums. Filling in for Scott Vestal on banjo. Because Scott and his lovely wife Alice on Thursday welcomed a 9-pound, 3-ounce boy to the world. So Scott sends his love, but he's at home in the right place right now. And so Ryan Cavanaugh, a great banjo player that I've played with sometimes I play with the band, Bill Evans, a saxophone player. I think there's different Bill Evanses. There's a banjo player. Well, the original Bill Evans, the keyboard player, and but Bill, also the saxophone player, used to play with Miles Davis and John McLaughlin. So for me, that's like a real large stretch to play in Bill Evans' band, and that's where I met Ryan, this wonderful banjo player. And Ryan now lives in Nashville, so we just threw him on the bus with us. And I think you'll be happy with his play, and he is marvelous. And so we miss Scott and love him, but we're... We hope to play a long time with Scott Vestal, but yeah, he's at the right spot, man. He's got a new boy.
You played More Pretty Girls on Lyle Lovett CD, I think in D, and you did a little. You went from a fiddle style scale to a Jesse McReynolds arpeggio. Can you kind of walk us through that transition?
Huh? I did. Boy, Yeah, I have a sort of a memory of that, but doesn't that sound crazy? You know, the thing you actually played, you can't always, you know, remember, but I am fortunate, you know, when you work a lot, you don't know. And I'm not the kind of person that sits around and listens to stuff that I've played on. I mean, that doesn't thrill me. I want to learn something else. But it probably was a Jesse McReynolds lick. Jesse McReynolds lick, and that's just your cross pick in 101. And I love Jesse's playing, and I tell you, he's one of the best cross pickers I ever heard on the mandolin. Is the great guitar player John Jorgensen. He can really, really do that. And but when for those of you that might not have heard much cross picking, what you're trying to do is use ringing strings almost like a banjo player would use. In a roll to let the notes ring against each other as you play the next note. In other words, what I'm doing there is it's one pick stroke down and two up. Because if you weren't cross picking, that those notes would sound like this. But the difference with the ringing notes. To my knowledge, Jesse started that style, and he certainly is the king of it. Yes?
Do you have any, either of you guys, do you have any hints for remembering the chords to a fiddle tune, like you're playing Patty on the Turnpike, and others as being an F and F? How do you keep them straight and remember them for all the different songs?
Well, really, to be honest, yeah. I'll wait and see what the bass player does. I have a half a beat to beat the right. The bass player has to do it right then. That's why Byron plays bass, not me. I think repetition is really part of it, and just playing them enough and jamming a lot with people, and it can actually get to the point where you can get mixed up, you know, playing. It's like sometimes I'll be playing the tune Salt Creek, for instance, and all of a sudden, before I know it, I've dipped into Red Haired Boy. There's, you know, sometimes you'll see similarities between those kind of tunes, but I mean, for me, now that being said, I've been hearing these tunes since I was, you know, 10 years old, and so it's sort of ingrained in me now, and now it's just natural that I hear, but I know what you mean. How do you, in the case of Patty on the Turnpike, that one is even kind of deceiving because the way Bill Monroe plays it, the notes aren't always, they don't always sound like they just went to an F chord to me. But that's the way I grew up hearing Bill Monroe do it, and so that's the way it sounds right to me. But, and you know, it's interesting because when I started going to a Texas fiddle contests and paying attention to these fiddlers, there'd be a few of these great Texas guitar players, and I noticed they played the same chords on every tune. And sort of, that's the way it seemed to me. Like there's like a kind of a pattern that Texas guitar players have been playing, like. Guys play any tune. So I really came away confused over that. And I go, why don't they change chords like the Southerners? And the Fiddlers go, ah, we just like it that way. Sounds good to us. So I wish, I don't know if that's adequately answering, but really it's, I think it's just a matter of repetition and doing them enough that maybe some tunes will just become second nature to you, and then you can use those tunes to sort of identify with others, chord-wise.
I was going to ask you to talk about your right-hand technique.
Well, my right hand is kind of an odd thing, because when I was a kid, and I still do play rhythm that way, close-handed, and that was definitely from watching Bill Monroe. I used to play lead that way, without ever putting my fingers down on the top. And then, unfortunately, who knows, you know? But on the way to the, I think it was the second or third Newgrass Revival job ever, we had a two-door 62 Buick, and I was asleep in the back seat, and we were going through the mountains of Carolina, and I don't think it had a windshield squirter cleaner, you know, to clean snow and salt off your windshield, but and if it did, it didn't work. And so our bass player was named Ebo was driving, and I was in the back seat asleep, and he got out and left his door open and to get snow to clean off the windshield, which he was doing. And in the meantime, in my sleep, I roll around like one of the guys, you know, in Deliverance. And I guess, I don't know if I was trying to shut off the light or the sound or whatever, but at any rate, stuck my hand in the door, and when he got back in, shut the door. Got to tell you, that'll wake you up faster than coffee. oh yeah, and so these three fingers got smashed up pretty good, and I had to play. And you know, back then, you know, there's no such thing as canceling the gig, or you know, I mean, now I would go to Louisville and seek out Dr. Kleinert, the most renowned hand surgeon going, But, you know, at the time we were in Florida and, you know, on the way to a festival, so, excuse me, all I could do, I couldn't even hold the fiddle bow with this hand, I mean, for about 4 months. And so all I could do was put a thumb pick back to here and hold it on with that one and just flail away at it. And I happened to meet Mike Marshall at the time when he was like, you know, 12 or 14 or something, and he said, "That's the way you do that?" I said, "Well, for now it is, yeah." But case point, something, I think something chipped up in there a little bit on the first finger, and after that, I would try to play close-handed, and it just hurt, and I just had to develop in sort of reangling my hand a little bit, and excuse me, and to kind of the reangle the hand, and now, when I see a video of, which is always, all check out yourself on a video sometime. I mean, you talk about the great humbler. I think it might be more of a horrifying experience than listening to yourself on tape. But boy, if, you know, to watch yourself play, oh man. Because to me, it looks like I have the stiffest wrist I've ever seen, and that my hand is going literally from here to here. And that was interesting, because one time I felt like I was getting stuck, and I could not seemed to get anywhere, and we were playing a job with Jethro Burns, and I said, do you see me, and I swear I'm just stuck, do you see any bad habits I've gotten into? And boy, it was like, no hesitation, he went, yeah. I said, what's that? He said, well, the strings are this wide, why does your hand go this far? I mean, good question, huh? And but with the bracing of the hand, I've noticed that it's not really that unlike the way Doc Watson braces his hand. And I didn't set out to copy Doc, but I just had to find a way that simply didn't hurt. And so that changed the stroke a little bit somewhat there. So that's kind of why this right hand looks like it does sometimes, because I just had to make a new way that didn't hurt. And my big disclaimer is that, boy, you should have heard me before I got my hand smashed. I was faster than anybody. I was faster than fast. Just ask me.
I have to tell you that everybody I've ever taken lessons says you're supposed to conserve motion, except
It's been said to me, how do you just hit one string? But fortunately, I mean, hopefully the proof is in the sound of it, to this day, I don't like watching videos with my right hand because I can't recommend this is the way you do it. It's what fortunately works for me, but you have to do what's comfortable, and you have to make a sound that's pleasing. So that's kind of what happens there. Nearing the time where we got to go do a sound check. Oh yeah, work. Maynard G. Krebs.
Work.
Yes, sir. Say, where'd you get that shirt, buddy?
Hi, shirt. I see you mostly at festivals. It's the first time I've just seen Sam in the show. And I was just wondering if there's a different mindset for when people come, like energy bring to the stage. Show that everyone's just here to see you, let's say a festival like Great Box, where I go a Saturday beforehand, and by Saturday night, as much as I'm looking forward to it, I'm exhausted. But you seem to always wake the hell up. Or you just come out and just give it everything, no matter.
Well, I've been fortunate that I've always been able to channel my energy towards playing. And unless I'm just really got the flu or something, it's if it's time to play, it's time to play. And but what you're talking about is there a different mindset energy wise as opposed to this type of controlled atmosphere? What I think of as controlled atmosphere: no rain, no wind, no mud, no festivarians falling on you, no bugs down the throat. That's and it always, for the first time about 2 summers ago, we were playing with a giant bug, wham, and I mean, it's like an eye watering. I think you know, when we play on a festival situation, you know, there's a hillside full of people. I'm sure I tend to be more, you know, outgoing and because let's face it, I mean, if you weren't a show off, you wouldn't do this in front of people. I mean, seriously, you have to have that much ego to get yourself out there and do it in front of people. Because I know a lot of great musicians that just have no desire to do it on stage or in front of people. So obviously something, you know, we did the applause. But I like to think of it as a circle of communication. You get going with the audience, and it has to start with us. You can't wait for the audience to make you feel good. It's our job to give you a different something to think about and a mind vacation. And I just know that if I go to a show or a sporting event or anything, if I think about one thing I ought to be doing, I'm not entertained enough. And so what we want to do is for that thought to not cross your brain for 2 hours. I know that, for instance, sometimes the way we might design the set list is, in this situation, we can soften up a little bit and relax and play a softer kind of tune. But when you're playing like in Grey Fox, you can soften up and play a soft number there. But when we're on like, you know, out and out rock and roll festivals and you just followed, you know, a loudish rock band, and then we want to come on and try to make the same kind of impact, I tend to just call tunes that are just going to smack you right in the face, and it's going to be that way for 90 minutes. So I think, yeah, one thing I'm trying to learn over the years, because we have a group that can play different kinds of tunes, and so there might be a certain situation where we go, you know what, let's play more bluegrass tonight. This is the appropriate spot for that. Or if we're in Florida, we played on, what was the name of that, the Long Dorado Festival last year? And you're on the same bill as the Beastie Boys, And I gotta tell you, man, the Beastie Boys played, we didn't know they could play instruments. I mean, we'd only seen them dance, and all of a sudden, they all played instruments, and they played them really well. So, you know, something to be learned. I mean, you know, just because you're going to see the Beastie Boys don't mean you won't get kicked around by the Beastie Boys at the same festival. So it's our job to come on and give you the goods, you know. So it's all love. It's all love. You feel the love. This is Rob Stokes, our road manager, and he has the wow, he looks like a president, looking around, not knowing what to say.
Where's the teleprompter?
Yeah, right. Where's my prompter? Quick. We'll do one more for you. And thanks for partaking today. And it is our pleasure. And nice to look out, see so many Red Sox caps, especially the green ones. That means St. Patrick's Day spring training. Now, the reason I was asking, where'd you get that Got Yarma shirt? I had one just like it, and some lowlife stole it from the dressing room. My Yarma shirt, man. So I'm saying, where did you get it? Well, there's one more, and I might be warmed up enough to do this one now. This one I first heard on a Stanley Brothers record. And I'm not sure if I ever knew who played the mandolin on this, because it's a mandolin tune. But I now realize it's probably a publishing thing. The title I learned this tune is called Ralph's Banjo Special, even though it's a mandolin tune. John Duffy used to play a tune similar to this, and he would call it Daybreak and Dixie. But I think there was one different chord in there somewhere, but I'm not sure. But when it gets to my last time around, I'm going to play my favorite John Duffy lick ever, and I still think it's a wonderful, cool lick that John used to do. Thank you. ask that Stephen Pogey on the guitar this afternoon.
To welcome you to center stage at Fitchburg State College. I have just a couple other thank yous. My first is to the New England Foundation for the Arts, who gave us a wonderful grant that not only brings this concert to you, but this afternoon we had a workshop by Sam Bush, and then followed up with a wonderful jam session with the local group Wide Open Spaces, who I'd like to thank for having done that for me. And then two other quick thank yous, one to Worcester Magazine and one to WICN in Worcester. And now, please welcome with me Sam Bush and his band.
Music lovers! Thank you very much for being here with us tonight. Okay, so this is what you do on a Sunday around here. Good! We thank you for being with us. Right off the bat, a shout out to all the folks that were at the workshop earlier. We thank you for being here today. Mandolin demonstrating a little bit earlier. Now we are back to the full piece band, and we're going to kind of get warmed up. Give us a couple now. We'll get warmed up with you. Here's an old Grandpa Jones tune we'd like to do for you. I've traveled over this country wide, seeking ports of fare. Up and down both coastlines, I've traveled everywhere. From Portland East to Portland West and all along the line. I'm going now to the place that's best, that old hometown of mine. Oh, thank you. that top side is in the grass fields, where the tins and bowls meet Ohio by a place called Louisville.
Made this song up with a friend of mine named John Pinnell, and if you're not familiar with him, he was a bass player in Alison Krauss's band Union Station for many years, and written quite a few fine songs that she's done over the period of time. So John and I made this one up, and this is about the love of going to watch the horses run, the racetrack, betting on the horses, what you do after you bet on the horses. Yeah, you might have the blues, and what you do when you, after you've done betting on the horses, you need to better go and get on out of there when it's about riding that bluegrass train. I'm riding to Kentucky on the southbound train. Listen to that banjo driving rhythm through my brain. Just get called this morning, can't say the reason why. I'm going down to Louisville to see my pony ride. See my pony ride. Down and riding in that bluegrass train. Riding in that bluegrass train. If there's trains running by, I'll be there for my last night. Riding in that bluegrass train. Riding in that bluegrass train. Lost all my money on the house that didn't show. Sunday's gone. You can hit me with another shot while I play my lonesome song. Yes, I play my lonesome song. Now we're riding that bluegrass train. Riding that bluegrass train. Better hold what you got. You won't keep that sucker high. Rolling through the driving rain. Thank you.
always go by change, just by sense. Got nothing in this world except a soldier's car. You can have it for a ticket all the way to Baltimore. All the way to Baltimore. Thank you.
500 other great songs too, so here's one of those we'd like to do for you. And this one is about being on the road, and John used to tell me he wrote this in a 5/4 time signature, meaning 5 beats to the measure, not the normal thing. And I said, how come? He said, well, when you're on the road, you're all messed up, and you're lucky if you can remember what town you even woke up in. And so I figured I'd write it in a messed up time signature. Makes sense to me. And if you're counting along, all you music students, if you haven't played this time signature, John used to explain it that it was a cross between waltz time, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, and straight time, like we were just playing 1-2-1-2. So the way he liked to describe it, and you can actually kind of hear that in the phrasing of this song, where he goes 1-2-3-1-2-1-2-3-1-2-1-2-1-2. There might be a pop quiz later. Basically, picture a three-legged dog walking. That's pretty much the way this tune sounds. So, I'd love to do an old John Hartford song for you. This is called On the Road. Thank you.
go on the road, I go fast, I go slow. If it's cold, don't you know, I won't be long, but this year. Back and forth, up and down, up and down, going round. Hanging up and down, I won't be long, but this year. When I go, I see friends, I see guys, when I
I believe we warmed up enough now to delve into this tune. Oh, no, this one will do. Actually, I think we're getting pretty warmed up. We're feeling good. Just when we thought we were ready. You had to quit lifting weights. You're breaking too many spoons on me. What we're gonna do is go way back to the original days when bluegrass music was started. Back in many people say that Bill Monroe, when he got a couple of young guys in his band back in 1946, two guys named Lester Flatt and Earl Scruggs, and together with Bill Monroe and Benny Martin on the fiddle, they made a sound that to this day we aspire to make that sound. When you do these kind of tunes. So, let's do an old one that Bill Monroe would have done when Lester Flatt was a young lead singer for him back in the day.
Yeah! take just a second now, okay, maybe a couple of minutes, to tell you who these fine pickers are if you haven't met us before. On the lead guitar, rhythm guitar, and the fine singing. Actually, he's a very good mandolin player, so you're not going to hear that tonight. Glad I guaranteed that. He is originally from Ashfield, Massachusetts. He's actually somewhat local, man. He's having a big old time. And by the way, I'd like to welcome his parents, Rich and Kathy, here tonight. Thank you for being with us. Always a pleasure to see you. And he was actually one of us has, you know, actually maybe more than one of us has been to college up here on stage. But UMass grad and was the choral director right close by, but about 20 miles away, is that right? Mahar High School, am I correct there? Cool. So one of us knows how to put on a musical. I thought we were going to have to do the Pirates of Penzance for you tonight, but somehow we got out of it. But we're awful proud of him, and because he can sing in obviously a variety of styles and brings an incredible amount of musical knowledge to this stage. So give it up for Mr. Stephen Mogin. Back here on the drums, stand up and take a bow if you would. Oh, he is standing, I'm sorry. Played for 17 years on the Tonight Show with the Doc Severinsen Orchestra, is that right? I got that wrong too. He watched the Tonight Show with Doc Severinsen. No, Doc Watson too. That money for the hair and the teeth still don't work. But no, he, as you will notice throughout the evening, incredibly versatile and actually has grew up playing jazz and he can play any kind of music. And as you will notice through the evening, it gives us a chance to stretch out and try different things as we're about to do on this next tune. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Chris Brown on the drums. Man on the bass who knows when to put all them notes in if you need it, or just to leave it out and give you the space. Oh yes, you don't get to play with anybody like this too often. And he's equally at home right now on the fretless bass guitar, also on the five-string fretted bass, as well as the bass fiddle. And the bass fiddle and the bass guitar are not at all the same beast, and it takes a special person to play them with equal ease, as he does. Friends, you just don't need a better musician than Mr. Byron House on the bass. And we're both from Bowling Green, Kentucky. Thank you. Hold your applause, please, for both. We gotta go on the show. And on the five-string banjo, normally, if you've seen our band before, you know that we have a fellow named Scott Vestal that plays banjo with us. And Scott and his lovely wife, Alice, on Thursday, Alice gave birth to a 9-pound, 3-ounce boy. Oh. And so Alice and Scott are home enjoying their new baby. And he sends his love and hopes to see you again. In the meantime, we are so fortunate that the very person we could possibly think to come in here and just step right in and not miss a beat, we have succeeded in that. On the five-string banjo, originally from the state of North Carolina, we get to play together sometimes in the band Bill Evans and Soulgrass together, and like I say, we couldn't have asked for a better picker to just step in and make us feel right at home. So give a lot of love to Mr. Ryan Cavanaugh. On the And not too many people know that he was the kid that played the little boy in Deliverance with the banjo. Nah, I'm kidding around. Actually, it was Bela Fleck. He's not old enough. All right, let's jam a little bit.
Thank you.
We want to feature Byron a little bit here. Spider John is my main friend. I'm in between faith and sure would be obliged if I could share your company. I'm on my way to nowhere. I've been running from my past, running from the things I used to be. Words, it sounds strange to you, but if you wait till the summer's sun, story told, you might calmly understand why I'm old and bent and devil spent. And I'm running out of time, but not long ago I held a royal flush in my hand. I was a supermodel. Old bank stew pigeon. Right.
Story. It's been these 30 years since I took to the road to find my precious jewel one. If you see my lily, won't you give her my regards? Tell her old spider got tangled in the black web that he spun. Spider got tangled in the black web that he spun. Byron House. Oh, cool, cool.
Wild Wild West. Say, how many people have been at the festival all 4 days? A little sobriety check we like to do. We're not riding home with any of y'all. Here's an old tune that, of course, you know who Bill Monroe is. Well, if you don't, look it up. But. He's credited as being the father of bluegrass music, and I believe that he is. Here's one by the, I guess he could be the uncle of bluegrass, Bill Monroe's brother, Charlie. So this is an old Charlie Monroe tune. I guess I'm the mother of bluegrass. Well, I don't know, every time Bill Monroe saw me walk by, he'd go, there goes the mother. I assume I'm the mother of bluegrass. So here's one by the uncle of bluegrass, Mr. Charlie Monroe. Thank you.
Thank you.
Go ahead, good friend.
Thank you. Thank you.
the Mahavishnu Mountain Boys. Thank you. Thank you, that's all the notes we know. I apologize we didn't bring any merchandise or anything tonight, but I will come out if anybody wants to talk about baseball, sign stuff. I'll come on out, give me a few minutes to regroup and come on out and say hello to you after a while. Special shout out to Ed Arndt, if I pronounced that correctly, for participating in our online giveaway. Yes, Ed, you've won a special prize. 1 week in the Sandbush Band bus. Second prize, of course, 2 weeks in the Sandbush bus. Hopefully we'll get to meet Jed Wiley. And I'd like to make mention, before we go, a couple of good friends of ours that work so hard, and they work so hard that all we got to do is stand here and play. On the Out Front Sound from the state of North Carolina, North Carolina, they might win the whole NCAA thing. I mean, it's possible. Louisville's out. Yeah, I know Louisville lost today. I'm aware. But now, for our good friend from the state of North Carolina, does such a wonderful job on the Out Front Sound, Mr. Darren Shoemaker. Thank you, Dan. Oh. And on the stage sound, running the stage monitors for us, does such a wonderful job at that. He's our road manager. Sorry, buddy, he's from Louisville, Kentucky. I know, we're all a little sad, but good luck to your favorite Final Four team. Seems how none of ours are in it. Darren's in it. Sorry, Darren. But does a wonderful job, road manager. We've been working together for years, and he makes our life easy on the road. Mr. Rob Stokes. Thank you, Rob. And thanks to Mary and all the folks for having us here. And thank you all for coming out on a Sunday night, by golly. We realize it's a school night, so thank you for coming out. Here's a tune written by Byron and Scott Vestal and I. Some of you might have heard this story before. This tune originally inspired. I had an old dog. His name was Ozzy, and he was lapping his water in a very strange cadence. He had a strange rhythm going on, and it got really good to him. And he kept it up for about 3 minutes, and it was this. Is 7 beats per measure. So basically, my dog was able to play in a timing that a lot of people have to go to jazz school to do. And so I sit there listening to him, and I made up a little melody to go around that particular riff. And that's about as far as I could get. And then Byron and Scott, we all got together and finished this thing up. So that's why it might make a little more sense when you hear the title. This is called Lapse in 7. And we want to thank you all very much for being with us. So here's last.
Thank you very much. You have been listening to Mr. Stephen Moten from Asheville. Chris Brown and his health and renown. On the bass, Mr. Byron House. Special guest, Ryan Cavanaugh on the banjo. Thank you very much. Thank you. I believe we're warmed up now. I apologize. We don't have the organ player with us tonight for Whitebird, but we will do it again. So please ask again another time. Thank you. Let us tell you how much we appreciate getting to do what we do for a living, and thank you all for being here with us. Thank you. That I could be an Indian on a painted pony so fast no one could ever catch me or get caught up in my past. I've ridden across many rivers, used many moons to tell the times. Then I tell all the young warriors many moons ago, this was mine, all mine. Same old river, same old sea, same old waters rushing over me. Same old moon, same old sun, same old race that we've always run. Same old race that we've always run. Thank you. emotion on the flat top guitar. Wish that I could be a pirate. Well, I'd sail the ocean blue. Weather for the bigger liners. Started sailing there too. I'd bury most of my treasure. So I would leave a big hole. And the only real sense of pleasure that I'd get is I'd sail free in my soul. Same old river, same old sea, same old waters, but you love me. Same old moon, same old sun, same old race that we've always run. Same old race that we've always run.
Thank you. Thank you.
wish that I could be an outlaw, running from the laws of times. No vigilante against the seasons, but I can't help but rewind. I'd always keep my revolver steady and fast at my side, and I'd rob a train down the road.
Thanks to our guest, Ryan Kavanaugh, for making it so easy for us. Thanks, Ryan.